You know, sometimes the American dream is forged out of hardship, and the Great Depression was definitely one of those times, time when people put their shoulder to the wheel and had to work extremely hard. Here's a little bit of sound.
You may leave and go to Harlem or Fag, but my slow drag will bring you back. Well, you may go, but this will bring you back.
That was actually Zora Neale Hurston, the author of the famous novel Their Eyes Were Watching God, singing a field song as part of a Federal Depression-era program to record folk traditions. It was called the WPA, part of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal. Now, the New Deal turned the American government into an employer on a grand scale, and the economy improved. Not right off the bat, though. How did issues like racial equality fare? We've got Michael Dawson with us. He's a professor of political science at the University of Chicago, and he says the New Deal might have reinforced some aspects of racial segregation. Explain that, Michael.
The New Deal had different types of effects on African Americans. As you mentioned, the WPA employed everybody from world-class authors to people working in forests and other places, which really helped African Americans. And so this, many of the relief programs helped particularly urban African Americans. But there are other programs that, particularly because of the influence of Southern legislators, either explicitly excluded African Americans, like Social Security programs, excluded categories of workers where blacks were overwhelmingly represented, like farmers and domestic workers, or in some cases, like the housing programs, explicitly excluded the benefits of those programs from African Americans. For example, the Home Owners Loan Corporation, which later became the FHA, invented redlining, thus banning loans, federal loans, housing loans, to any neighborhood that had African Americans. So the Social Security program and its racial exclusions, some of the problems with the agricultural programs and how they were administered by local officials in the South, and the housing programs all reinforced structural economic disadvantage for African Americans. So
let me ask you to drill down a little bit. Redlining is an issue that has come up a lot as people have looked at this whole mortgage crisis, and some people have even argued, you know, minorities have been more responsible for the mortgage crisis because they took out bad loans. Other people say, well, they took out bad loans because there's mortgage redlining. Explain the term redlining, first of all, and then how does it really date back to the New Deal?
Well, it dates back to the New Deal explicitly because neighborhoods were color-coded. And neighborhoods that had African Americans had a red code, and those neighborhoods were not eligible for federal loans. So that's where the word redlining comes from. Neighborhoods that, because of the presence of blacks, were no longer eligible for, or not ever eligible for, federal loans. Other types of exclusions, if you had Jewish or Catholic residents in a neighborhood, they also were disadvantaged, not to the same degree as neighborhoods with African Americans. That's where the term redlining originated. And one of the things that happened meant that, one, it reinforced segregation because it made white residents even more unlikely to welcome black residents because it means they couldn't get loans either for their houses. Two, black neighborhoods often would deteriorate more quickly because they couldn't get loans to upgrade or to improve their housing stock.
You know, Professor Dawson, you raise an issue that I wonder if it's echoed in the current debate over the stimulus package. There's this tension between reforming America in the middle of crisis and forgetting about reform and just pouring money into essentially the status quo and reinforcing some bad decisions of the past. Do you see that as what happened in the New Deal, and possibly there's an echo of that today?
Well, I think there's a little bit of an echo of that in the sense that because of our federal programs often get interpreted and implemented in different ways, or participation often is decided at the local level or the state level. So, particularly during the New Deal, the South was a critical part of FDR's governing coalition and electoral coalition. He was not going to implement any policies, whether it was around the New Deal or around anti-lynching laws, that would jeopardize Southern support. Here, the situation, I think, is somewhat different. Particularly with the stimulus package, we were seeing the same thing that we saw with the Agricultural Assistance Act during the New Deal, that some Southern governors, particularly in states with very heavy black populations like Louisiana and Mississippi, are opting out of programs, or at least threatening to, in this case, particularly the unemployment aid, that would particularly benefit African-American citizens of those states, particularly in states like Louisiana and Mississippi, where we see black unemployment rates three times that of white. And, of course, Representative Clyburn was pointed this out and was immediately accused of playing the race card by some of these governors.
Well, let's take a look at what the positives of the New Deal were for African-Americans. I mean, were there any in your mind?
Oh, I think the WPA and the relief programs are extremely positive for African-Americans. As in most economic downturns, African-Americans were harder hit than many other Americans, although America as a whole suffered greatly. So particularly in the urban programs, really helped the working class and to some degree the middle class, as we pointed out earlier in the discussion. And that's why we see particularly the urban working class, northern urban working class, shifting to the Democratic Party for the first time during the New Deal, particularly the later years of the New Deal. So, yes, the programs are quite, particularly in the short term, extremely helpful to urban African Americans.
Well, Michael, thanks so much for this perspective. You really have given us a broad context. That's Michael Dawson, professor of political science at the University of Chicago.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.